Got some names for you to start the program today. Let's see, Mendota or Pepin or Winnebago or Mirror or Kangaroo or Camelot. What are those names? Well, they're all names of lakes, at least one of them man-made, right here in the state of Wisconsin. We're lucky to have so many thousands of lakes. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're going to learn about the health of our lakes right here in the state to begin with and how, as a state, we can plan for their healthy futures. Two guests with us today. Steve Carpenter is director of the UW Center for Limnology. He is the Stephen Alfred Forbes Professor of Zoology at UW-Madison. And Steve, thanks for spending time with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Delighted to be here, Larry.
Well, and also with us, Jake Vander Zanden, who is with us a few months back. He's a professor at the Center for Limnology in the Department of Zoology at UW-Madison. And Jake, good to have you back as well. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry.
It's a pleasure.
We have lots to talk about. You know, limnology, maybe we should just start. What is limnology?
Well, it's not the study of arms and legs. It's the study of inland waters. And Wisconsin has one of the oldest programs in the world.
It really is, and located kind of right on a lake, too, for that matter.
That's right. We're on two lakes, Lake Mendota in the south and Trout Lake in the north.
How many lakes do we have in Wisconsin?
We have 15,000 lakes here in the state of Wisconsin, which is just absolutely remarkable. And I want to note that the Minnesota license plate says 10,000. So obviously we're way ahead of them.
Absolutely. We have some Minnesota listeners, and they'll probably call in and complain about that.
Hey, it says it on the license plate.
It says it right on the license plate. We've got 15,000, though. By the way, as you listen in, you can join in. Maybe if you're from Minnesota or Wisconsin, do you worry about the health of our lakes? Wonder what you can do to help keep our lakes healthy for generations to come? Steve and Jake certainly have some input on that regard. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question or maybe a nice lake photo on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post right there. What role do lakes play in sort of the larger environmental landscape of Wisconsin?
Well, they're the most conspicuous landform of our state. That's why we're not Nebraska.
Yeah. Nebraska has how many lakes?
Not very many.
No, not very many at all. And we sort of rely on them. I mean, we want healthy lakes, and we need healthy lakes, I guess what I was going to say.
Oh, yeah. We are the water tower of the country, and so we have the headwaters of the Wisconsin River that feeds the Mississippi. We've got a huge recreational economy centered on lakes. Real estate values are driven by lakes. People fish on them, swim in them, boat on them.
And we're kind of responsible, aren't we, for the health of them in a lot of ways?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. The things that we do on land in so many ways have downstream effects on lakes. So if we are, our land use practices are destructive and we have nutrients running off, they ultimately impact our lakes. So there's a very strong connection there.
Is it nutrient runoff the biggest? What are the biggest threats? Let's take a look at that to our lakes.
The big ones are nutrient runoff, invasive species, and in some cases, overfishing.
Nutrient runoff, overfishing?
Yeah, in some cases.
And how is that a threat?
Well, if we're overfishing a species we like, then we might be depleting the stock.
Yeah.
And the way I think of this is that, I mean, there are other things as well. There's the loss of lakeshore habitat or riparian habitat. There's toxic contamination. And the thing that really brings down a lake is when you have four or five of these things all happening at the same time. So it's the death by a thousand cuts or the triple whammy. Yeah. And, you know, so sometimes the system can take one source of stress, but is it going to be able to handle five of them at the same time? And chances are probably not.
And phosphorus certainly seems to show up as one of the, you mentioned nutrients, of the nutrients, phosphorus probably.
Phosphorus is the big one, and we have a lot of very rich soils in Wisconsin. We're an agricultural state. We use a lot of fertilizer, produce a lot of manure, and we have a lot of phosphorus issues.
So lots of things to kind of think about and wonder about, and I know you guys are doing a lot of research in the areas in several different areas, actually. I have a lot of questioners online here. In fact, every one of our lines is full. Let's go to Brian first in Duluth, Minnesota. Brian, hi. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, thank you. We just finished a 2-year citizen lake monitoring program here, and our lake was pretty healthy. There was one note of concern, and that's why I'm calling the chloride levels. It's not at an alarming high rate, but it doubled since 1993. I think it went from 20 parts per million to 40 parts per million. That's not a dangerous level, but it's a concerning trend. And I was wondering any comments on that as a threat?
Steve, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. It depends on the lake. Extremely urban lakes that are just completely surrounded by towns, are the ones that are most vulnerable to problems. Frankly, I worry more about groundwater and chloride contamination than I do about surface water. Most of our lakes are flushed pretty regularly by rainfall and snowmelt, and it just washes the chloride out.
But even though the levels that are quite double what they were seeing some years back, not a level of concern for you?
40 is not a level of concern. I do know of urban lakes in Wisconsin that are up in the hundreds, and we worry about it in those lakes.
Yeah. And again, that really stems from road salt impact. So it may be that there has been excessive road salting in this lake, but that would be the thing to watch. But yeah, I mean, it seems like you're not at the brink of any really huge issues yet.
All right.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Sarah in New Auburn, your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I would like to raise the issue and ask a question about the impact of high-capacity wells. Where we live, we're recently seeing a lot more high-capacity wells being used, both in the farming industry and in the sand mining industry. And I'm wondering, we haven't had very good luck finding hard research regarding the impact of a high-capacity well on our water table. And I'm wondering, without being able to present hard research, it seems obvious that if you were pulling a whole ton of water out and it wasn't falling back in the same spot, that you would actually be damaging lakes.
Mm-hmm. Comments from you guys?
Yeah, I think there have been some people working on this issue in Wisconsin. Researchers at the USGS and at UW-Stevens Point have been pretty involved in conducting studies on the impacts of these really large high-capacity wells on the water table. And again, this is outside of my area, but my understanding is they generally have found that this huge amount of pumping does bring down the water table, and that can have direct impacts on the water levels in lakes. There's a lot of lakes in that Central Sands region of Wisconsin that have had their water levels come down, and some rivers like the Plover River have dried up. And now there could be other things going on as well. And, rainfall varies over time, but, it's, again, like you had said, it makes a lot of sense that this heavy pumping is going to bring down the water table, and I think there's evidence for that.
Yeah, we've got to manage it as a single connected system. The groundwater is connected to the lakes and the streams, and we can't manage it piecemeal. We have to look at the whole water budget of the landscape.
Mm-hmm. So one place to go, I would think, with the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. Jake, you were mentioning that they've done some research there. You might want to check in there, Sarah.
USGS also.
Yeah.
And U.S. Yeah. Geological Survey.
George Kraft, Ken Bradbury,
yeah,
like that.
Okay, great. Thank you for calling, Sarah. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Dave in Reedstown next. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. I was glad to hear the guests at least state the problem right at the beginning of the program. But the reason, though, I think that we are in this state, I'm 63 years old. The water quality in Wisconsin has been rotten my entire life. There are cows in the water out here. I live in the Kickapoo Valley now. Entire herds of cows are allowed to graze and wander and defecate and urinate in the streams and creeks around here. And even in the Dane County area where I grew up, walking around like Lake Iganza, I lived with my parents a couple years ago. Well, all the lakes now are surrounded by McMansions, and these are owned by people, the wealthy, that are more concerned with their pristine, perfect lawn than they are than with water quality. And you would see the True Green trucks going up and down the road every day, spraying right up to the edge of the water, and nobody cares. You could smell it. It was the predominant smell along Lake Iganza, was the smell of herbicides.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's, Steve, do you want to, Steve Carpenter, you want to make a comment?
Phosphorus and nutrients are a huge problem, particularly in the southern two-thirds or so of Wisconsin. There's no doubt about it. Urban runoff is certainly a factor, and so moderating nutrient use on lawns is important, but really agriculture is the big driver. It's runoff of manure and soil that is enriched with phosphorus is the major driver of poor water quality in Wisconsin.
What works when it comes to managing something like phosphorus? Are there things that work to keep phosphorus levels, get them to be reduced?
Or? You know, it's an international crisis, and in the last 2 or 3 years, there has been a growing tenor of scientific papers from all over the world saying, hey, this isn't working. The policies that that we've implemented for phosphorus management are not working anywhere. And so we've really got to find a new way to tackle it. One of the projects that I've found pretty intriguing is a project here in the Yahara watershed up near Wanakee, north of Lake Mendota. And in that project, farmers and a private business group called the Clean Lakes Alliance and scientists from the DNR and the university are working together to find solutions that are acceptable to the farmers and actually work for keeping phosphorus out of the creeks. And there's very rigorous monitoring going on. So we're going to know how that worked.
Well, you'd think from a farmer's standpoint, you got to pay a lot of money for phosphorus. Mm-hmm. Why would you want it to leach out?
That's a really good point, and we saw that very dramatically in 2008 when world phosphorus prices spiked by a factor of 8 in less than a year. It became incredibly expensive. A problem we have in Wisconsin, though, is that manure is a waste product, and if you're a dairy farmer, you've got to get it out of your barn because you need to be producing clean milk, and you've got to get the manure out of there, and you got to put it somewhere. So manure is a big
issue. Manure management, then, is the big issue.
That's right.
Dave, thank you for calling. I want to give Pam in Milwaukee a chance to join us today. Pam, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to know what role you're taking in studying the viral septicemia that has been washing up all the fish. It's been attributed to alewife die off. However, this has been documented all over the country since 2006, and we now have lake trout that are washing up. They're disoriented, they're swimming in circles and beaching themselves, and no one has even reported on this. And then in addition to that, some of the labs that have been trying to get to the source have been threatened with decertification, because there are a lot of fisheries that are involved in this. So I was just wondering where you're at looking at this problem here.
Jake Vanderzen?
I'm learning some things from you here. Our Center for Limnology at UW-Madison hasn't really been involved in any of that work. It sounds like there's something going on, and it's something mm-hmm. that maybe Steve and I should look into.
So. Yeah. I would also suggest that you contact the aquaculture program at UW-Madison or UW-Milwaukee.
Yeah, we have the UW-Madison aquaculture program. We could actually might even get somebody on from there to talk with us about perhaps that virus. Mm-hmm. So Thank you for calling, and I'm sorry we don't have a quick answer for you on that, Pam, but I, again, try the UW Aquaculture Program, or UW Milwaukee has...
They have one, too.
Has one as well. We are talking today with two guests, as a matter of fact. Steve Carpenter directs the UW Center for Limnology. Jake Vander Zanne is professor at the Center for Limnology, and talking with them today about the health and well-being of our Wisconsin lakes. And I certainly invite you to join in with your questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look at the health of our Wisconsin lakes with our two guests from the UW, Steve Carpenter and Jake Vander Zanne. And again, you can join us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@WPR.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. How do scientists monitor the health of our lakes? What are you guys looking for?
We look at everything from bacteria to fish for water quality. We focus on phosphorus, and we focus on the blue-green algae blooms, the cyanobacteria that are sometimes toxic and always produce the green scums that we see every summer.
Yeah, and you know, oftentimes citizens get involved in these efforts to monitor our lakes. So there's a lot of really active citizen lake monitoring efforts, which I would encourage people to get involved in. And they often use tools like the Secchi disc, which is this little round black and white dinner plate, which many of you have probably seen if you've interacted with lakes at all. And you just lower it into the water, and you measure the depth at which it disappears. So that's the Secchi disc. Very, very, very high tech.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Jake, are there ways that citizens can get involved in invasive species?
Yes. I mean, invasive species is another real indicator of the health of lakes, and there are programs where citizens can get involved in monitoring as well. One for extremes is called Water Action Volunteers. That's just as an example.
Water Action Volunteers. Yeah. Or wave.
Wave.
Yeah. Wave. Yeah. All right. And just go online to Water Act. You put WAV in there, you're going to get it.
Yeah, Google it.
Google it.
Yeah.
Let's go to Tanya, I believe, in Bayfield. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. My question was, I wonder if your guest knows how the programs around the Madison area lakes, they had programs, I don't know how many up and running digesters they had in the area for farmers where they could, instead of using fertilizers with nitrates that run off into the lakes and in that area, they started to, and I don't know how many years ago this was, put up these digesters where they could bring their manure, et cetera, and then from their animals. And then they could have it processed into this type of almost like peat that they then could put on their fields instead of fertilizers with nitrates. And then that would, you know, eliminate the nitrates running off into the rivers and streams.
I think right. Steve Carpenter, you're familiar with that program.
Yeah, that's right. There are two of them in Dane County. One of them has been functioning for a couple of years now. You can think of it as sewage treatment for cows. We've been unsuccessful in toilet training cows. Mm-hmm. However, we can gather the manure up and ship it off to the digesters, and it's the nitrate is actually converted to harmless nitrogen gas. 80% of the atmosphere is nitrogen gas, and the phosphorus is collected in a cake that can then be dried and very cheaply transported. You can landfill it, or you can sell it to a place that actually needs phosphorus fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, you know, we're early into the experiment here. We probably need more like 20 of them instead of two, but so far so good.
Mm-hmm. Jake, you were going to add?
Yeah, it's important to note that the phosphorus doesn't go away when you run it through a digester. So if you take that material and you just spread it back on the same fields you were going to spread it in before, it doesn't solve the problem. The key is when you have it now in a concentrated form and you can sell it, send it away, send it to some place that actually needs the phosphorus. Here in the Yahara watershed where we have a lot of cows, we generally don't need the phosphorus.
Yeah. Thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. Phyllis in Waupaca, on to you. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I am concerned about the big mine up in northern Wisconsin that's going to go in up there, and I'm concerned what it's going to do to Lake Superior. And I wondered if your opinion on the wisdom of doing that. And also I wish that the politicians would put that in their ad so that we would all know where they stood on that. And can I ask a second question?
Sure, go ahead.
There's a lake at Hartman Creek State Park that doesn't have any runoff from animals or anything, you know, because it's in the park. And it's always all filled up with weeds and stuff. Why would that lake be so full of weeds? And I'll take my answer off the air. Mm-hmm.
We may not have a specific answer about that particular lake, but there. But Jake, you maybe address in general what happens in a lake like that.
Yeah, it's possible for there to be lakes that are high in nutrients, but they're not influenced by farming and human activities. It may be that there were farms around there 75 years ago that dumped a lot of nutrients into the lake, and then that land has regrown. So it's really hard to know, but there are lakes that are naturally productive.
Yeah. And let's see, what was the other?
The Lake Superior mine.
The mine, yes. Mining.
I think she highlights the need for there to be a set of objective processes for evaluating whether a large-scale project like this proposed mine is going to have environmental impacts. And so it's really important for the state, federal government, and tribal authorities to be able to take the time to evaluate these big projects. As for the details of what could happen from the mine, I mean, the hope is that the people who are doing these evaluations are doing a good job and able to detect in advance what impacts they would have. She mentioned something about legislators and voters as well. I think that she should be able to get her hands online as to how her legislators have voted on various mm-hmm. issues. So their information is there.
There was a science assessment public forum of the mine in Managua about a month ago, and the complete video of that is available at the Center for Limnology website. And it's a group of scientists from around the state who are experts in different aspects of the mine, and it's about a two-hour video that the listener can easily access. That's limnology.wisc.edu/blog.
Limnology.wisc.edu/blog. We'll try to put that up on my Facebook page, too, okay. as a link. It's hard to imagine a hole in the ground that it stretches from the city of Madison to the city of Janesville and 3 miles wide not having some impact.
You could imagine it could have some impact.
Oh, and speaking of effects, let's go to John, and Ladysmith has a question, kind of related, I think. John, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I live here in the community, but I'm concerned there's a paper mill in town here that they get all used paper in, and all the paper mill does is de-ink. They take the ink out of this paper, and then they, whatever chemical solution or whatever to take this ink out, they ship the paper away then that's recycled, and this all of this sludge goes in a big pond, and about every month they haul out probably about 100, 200 quad axles of this sludge onto these farm fields. And my concern is that I went to the farm show here this spring in Ladysmith and asked the head of the Farm Bureau if there's been a study done on this stuff yet to see if it's good for the land. And he said, not to his knowledge. And I said, well, don't you think it would be a good idea if we had a study done on this stuff? I said, all it is ink and chemicals that got this ink out of the paper that's being pumped back into this farmland.
Good question. And Steve Carpenter?
Well, first of all, the usual issue with paper plants, the most common issue is contaminants that are produced as a part of the paper production process itself. And they include chemicals that are related to PCBs and other toxins that could be a concern. I'm not specifically knowledgeable about de-inking itself. Here in Wisconsin, I would probably contact the State Lab of Hygiene or the Environmental Chemistry Program at UW-Madison to find out about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what goes. I'm not sure in the first place what paper. What kind of paper? Mm-hmm. Is it newsprint? Is it?
Yeah, sure.
Because the print would, the ink would be quite different depending on the.
Mm-hmm. I think, John, it's really good that you ask that question and sort of act as the eyes and ears of our environment. And I would think that the DNR would have permitted an operation where you're taking this huge amount of sludge and then dumping it onto fields. And I mean, you know, at this point, you know, I don't think Steve and I would have any idea of what would be in the sludge, but it seems like you need to know.
Right.
And it sounds like it's a really large volume of stuff that's at play here.
I would bet that if you went to your local DNR office, you're going to be able, they might not have the information right there handy, but they would, they had to have permitted that.
There's no way they would not have permitted
that.
So there'd be an application on file. And
yeah, there'd be some sort of application and with some sort of description of what that material, what those chemicals are. So I hope you'll follow up on it because good for you.
Yeah, keep working on it.
Yeah, appreciate your call. We have Nick in Madison next with a question. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I have two questions, and I'd like to hear their remarks to one or both of them. I'm just wondering, is there more of a problem now that there are factory farms where they have a hard time finding places to put all the manure? That's one. And the other one is, I want to know if the university was involved with the new pier at the new hotel on the south shore of Lake Mendota. Edgewater Pier, yeah. Thank you. They're planning on a 22-foot wide, 100-foot long pier there. Someone actually ran into the Edgewater Pier back a few years, and I believe he was killed because it's on a bend. They're also planning for two 200-foot floating long floating piers that will house 44 boat slips and that they can rent out to the public. They want to dredge the lake to allow for commercial use of passenger boats.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to permanently affix a pier to the lake floor. Like, you know, with having a 22-foot, 100-foot, 150-foot long, nothing will grow. It will be affecting spawning areas.
Well, let's get some comments. Certainly, Steve Carpenter, you guys spent a lot of time on Lake Mendota.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first of all, to the question about cows, yes, there are a lot more cows, and the manure production per cow is up. So we've definitely got a problem with too much manure. The moving to the Edgewater Pier, first of all, we were not involved in any studies or permitting of that pier. And I could only speculate about what the effects might be.
Yeah, I mean, for a local site-specific thing like that, the DNR typically wouldn't, you know, call us. They would have a process for evaluating whether or not it has an impact. It sounds to me like it was approved, but as you describe, it sounds like a really, you know, large footprint. This is not just a tiny little dock. This is a pretty huge huge thing, which could have some safety or environmental concerns. So,
have you guys done any research in that area, or know of research on piers and their effect on water quality or on lakes?
There's been surprisingly little. I've definitely seen some impacts on habitat and how fish use habitat, how it might promote invasive species, especially if you're developing like a huge sort of not just a pier, but like a marina and these really, really highly altered thing. A pier is one thing. A really large marina is another.
I mean, a highly engineered shoreline is going to be poor fish habitat. And I have seen people argue that small piers actually replace the natural woody habitat of fallen trees for fish spawning. That's absolutely false. There's no substitute for natural shoreline for fish production.
I could believe that.
People fail to recognize how important it is to have these fallen trees and branches and logs just hanging into the water. And people like when I was a kid, my dad, I grew up on Lake Winnebago, so I'm, you know, Wisconsin. My dad used to make me go pull these branches out of the lake and, you know, clean up the shoreline, you know, get it nice and cleaned out of the waterway. And, you know, and then looking back on it, you realize what a huge negative impact that has on the fish and the wildlife. So keep those fallen trees along the shore.
Absolutely. It's really important. In northern Wisconsin, we found that fish production has been reduced by a factor of 3 in lakes where the residents have removed the woody habitat from the edge of the lake. So if you want a productive fishery, leave the fallen trees there.
Yeah. As somebody's done a lot of musky fishing over the years, some of the northern Wisconsin lakes, frankly, people are chopping down some trees and letting them fall right in.
that's right. We've actually investigated that as a management technique, and it does work. I would advise you to check with your local DNR office and make sure you're appropriately permitted.
Sounds good to me, but we don't permit those sorts of things.
I've observed it. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And then, of course, fish cribs. So there you have it, Nick. Thank you so much for calling. I want to give Daniel a chance in Minong to join us. Daniel, hi.
Hello. What is the impact of antibiotics and human hormones in the waste disposal plant effluent which flows into our lakes and streams?
All right, antibiotics. You guys have done some research on this, Steve Carpenter?
No, I haven't, but I've read some of the literature on it. First of all, with antibiotics, the big issue is the evolution of antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria, and this is a huge human health problem. And it's been found that some of those genes are amplified in cyanobacteria, the blue-green algae that cause our water quality problems. And there have even been cases of antibiotic-resistant bacteria getting into hospitals through cyanobacteria that people have ingested while swimming. So the antibiotic abuse is a pretty serious human health problem. The caller also asked about human hormones, and that is an active area of research right now, but the researchers in that area are finding that it changes the life history and the productivity of invertebrates that are fish food. And so there is the potential of adverse effects on fisheries.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, you guys at the Center for Limnology are working on a lot of, I think, interesting things, including something you call Yahara 2070, an initiative. Tell us about that initiative.
Well, the goal of Yahara 2070 is to envision what the watershed around Madison might be like in 2070. And we've constructed 4 very different futures for the watershed. Those are illustrated using narratives, using just stories and art. And now we're running computer models to see what the environmental consequences of those are. You can download the stories and view the art at yahara2070.org.
And do you think that model could be used in other areas?
It definitely is an approach that can be used pretty widely. We did a very similar project for Vilas County in about 2002.
And so have you come... Has the modeling shown anything?
We're just starting the modeling, and I'm sorry I don't have any results for you on the modeling at this point.
Let's talk just for a minute about getting involved. What do individuals do to keep our lakes healthy or help keep our lakes healthy?
Well, Jake mentioned joining a citizens group that keeps track of water clarity using a Secchi disc. They're pretty inexpensive. You could make one or buy one for a few bucks and join in tracking the clarity of your lake. There are also opportunities to get involved informing other citizens about invasive species risks and opportunities for various cleanup projects.
You know, here's one that I just... I've been thinking about the last couple of days. I noticed in our neighborhood, there's some people who have their downspouts from their runoff from their roofs that just goes right onto the driveway. It washes down into the street and then into the storm
right
sewers.
Yeah.
And, you know, if that water soaks into the ground, it's going to be purified. It's not going to cause these, you know, huge floods as everyone's water washes down at one time. And, you know, lately we've been having these really large rain events. Over the last decade, we've had many more large rain events than we've had historically. And this year, we've had some, you know, as we all know, we've had some huge, huge storms, especially down here in southern Wisconsin. If that water doesn't run off straight into the street and into the storm sewer, but instead soaks into your lawn, that can actually make a big difference in improving water quality.
So that's something that anybody can do. If your
yeah.
if your downspout is running right onto the sidewalk
yeah.
or
mm-hmm.
into
yeah.
your driveway,
yeah,
make it swing
in,
it over.
Yeah, yeah. You
sure.
get these little extension tubes and run
yeah,
it to where you
right
want. You don't want it to soak in right next to your house. So you can move it away from your house a little bit, but have it go into some sort of green spot. It's sort of like creating a little rain garden, but you don't need to, you know, put a ton of money into it. You just direct the water in the right way.
Yeah.
That can make a huge difference.
Well, I actually did that in my own home 2 years ago.
Great, great.
It was we just moved in, and it was running onto the sidewalk. I said, well, that doesn't make any sense, so put it in the ground.
Great.
Yeah. Good.
Check mark for you.
I heard it A today. Oh,
seal of approval from the Center for Limnology, the Larry Miller Show.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, you guys. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us, and I think we can there's plenty to talk about. We can have you back and do it again.
That'd be great.
I'd enjoy it.
Thank you so much for
thanks,
being
Larry.
With us.
Okay, thanks, Larry.
Steve Carpenter directs the UW Center for Limnology. He's the Stephen Alfred Forbes Professor of Zoology at UW-Madison. Also with us, Jake Van Der Zanden, Professor at the Center for Limnology and Department of Zoology at the UW-Madison. Really fascinating and great to know that our lakes are in some good hands. There's a lot of research being done to help our lakes. Coming up next, we're going to continue to talk about lake ecology and ecology and the role that our Wisconsin scientists and researchers are playing in the larger, in the big global picture. So I hope you'll stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.